SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
Very good. Wednesday, race fans, Sirius 219 XM 201 Sports Zone 964 and SteveBick.com, our website. I, by all rights, should not be doing a show. I say this every year that every Yom Kippur that I end up working, I always say the same thing. I apologize. My first transgression of the new year, working today on the high holiday. I was off Monday. I had to take Monday, so I couldn't do it. I hope Yahweh understands. What can I tell you? I hope it's an easy fast for everybody and a wonderful new year again. Happy, healthy. To all celebrating. Meanwhile, those that are celebrating the Pick Six carryover at Belmont, that'll be a focus, particularly in hour three. Seth Merrow will turn up, as will Dick Powell. And, of course, with Dick, we're going to recap Sunday and Monday at Presque, among other things. And we'll also get some of Dick's opinions for the sequence. Off the turf. As anticipated in the discussion yesterday with Andy, the rain, the residual and remnants of the hurricane, and as expected. And they hopefully won't, hopefully won't go beyond today that we stay off the turf, and hopefully things can, it's going to be a nice weekend. So ideally it'll firm up and we'll get turf racing, fall turf racing, as it is, as discussed and described yesterday by Andy. But meanwhile, the rest of that sequence, you know, three races on the main and three that will move to the main track, and it doesn't take away, really, from the sequence, to be honest. We'll see about the scratches, but there's one MTO in both the fourth and the sixth, and there's three MTOs in the seventh. Those are the races, the fourth, sixth, and seventh. And the seventh in particular will be the most important when looking for the scratches in a couple of hours, about 11, hopefully before Seth and Dick get a chance to talk, and we'll go through it. And the stake, the Joseph A. Gimma, nice group of the two-year-old fillies, and while Andy and I kind of agreed that Elegant Zip is the right filly to key off, this is very tricky, and in some ways, I think the key to some ticket building. I may very well see about the scratches and how it affects decision making, but I'm of a mind to single Elegant Zip. Because if you don't make a stand in the stake, it's going to be very tough. And there doesn't seem to be any or many places to go looking for a lean, a single. To try to narrow the play, because there's a lot of races that are going to require two, three, and more in terms of coverage. And Elegant Zip, there is plenty of pace in here, and Elegant Zip shows some tractability to get behind the speed, and there is speed, and a lot of it coming from the Maya Engelhart horses. He's got Party Like Grandma, Mom Meatloaf, and Cartwheel and Lulu. And, Cartwheel and Lulu, anxious to see what Dick and Seth think. Cartwheel and Lulu, if you didn't notice this on your first pass, take another look, because the filly beat the boys in her maiden win at Finger Lakes. And she did it impressively. The horses that chased her home, second and third, they both came back to win. Not that they won, you know, with any impressive figs or anything from that standpoint, but she did beat two next out winners, and actually fourth in that race, you had Pay the Vet that turned around and was third in the aspirant. So she faced some nice boys, and now she gets back with her own sex, and Cartwheelin' Lulu gets Johnny as well. This is Roddy Valenti, a homebred of Bustin' Stones. He bred this one with Dr. Belinsky. This is a good group. It's a well-matched group, but I'm of a mind to lean heavily on Elegant Zip. And part of it, as I mentioned to Andy yesterday when he and I kind of both landed on her, the fact that she was chasing Collegeville Girl home in that debut, the maiden race for the two of them. So, some hard decisions, I think, to make in here, and let's see about scratches out of the three turf races. Who comes out? And that'll change up maybe some of the pace. You know, you also had in the first leg, you've got the entry. We'll see if either or both go ahead and run. This is Ascender and My Heart Belongs to Daddy, both homebreds by Larry Goichman. And Michelle Nevins got Ascender. Chad Brown, My Heart Belongs to Daddy. And we'll see about the two of them, you know, that have only made starts on the grass, if either part of the entry remains in. There's also Ray Handel with the decision to make about Theater in the Round. This is a first level loss. This was a good race either way, whether it stayed on turf or moved to the main. So we'll see how scratches shape the three races that make up what should be a heavily played sequence today at Belmont. 326,000 starting out. So Andy thought four times, another 1.2, 1.3, 1.4. It'll be over a million and a half by the time they enter the gate for the fourth race. 309 post to start this sequence. So that's the first order of business. Let me tell you what else is going on today. Pete Fornatale will join us in a little bit after this first break, just a few minutes away. And Pete has got a big day planned because, of course, the schools downstate with the high holidays, a lot of schools closed. Pete and Perrin are going to the Bronx Zoo, which is always fun. And Tina and I, in fact, went. When did we go? We went in July? In July, I think. We go once every 2 years or so, the Bronx Zoo. And whenever I go and I tell my father that I went, Tina and I went to the Bronx Zoo, my father trots out the old family story of me losing a teddy bear at the Bronx Zoo when I was 4 or 5. And then the family searching high and low to find the teddy bear. That chestnut gets trotted out annually or whenever Tina and I go. So Pete taking advantage. We'll talk to Pete Fornatale after the break. Bill Gallo is going to check in, and tomorrow, the Lonesome Glory, as well as the Bill Entenmann Memorial, starts the card at Belmont, and the turf should be absolutely perfect. Absolutely perfect with some give in the ground, and you got a very nice and important set of horses that came together for, particularly for the Lonesome Glory, the second to last grade one before Far Hills a month from now. And there's a championship to be won, and frankly, it seems to go through Rick Hendricks. Zanjabil, probably your leader in the clubhouse, but he also has Optimus Prime. Zanjabil, second in the Colonial Cup, second in the Temple Gwathmi, but then a winner at Percy Warner, wins the Iroquois, and another grade one win by Zanjabil, who bypassed Saratoga, would be really put him in the driver's seat if he isn't already. But Optimus Prime came to North America, Rose Bryant Farm, and won the Turf Riders Cup and won it well. So Optimus Prime, a win in the Lonesome Glory, and then a chance at Far Hills could spell the difference. There's a few in here, though. Show Court back for Arch Kingsley out of the Smithwick win, and then, you know, was an even fourth in the Turf Riders. And he would, you know, start to look attractive as a potential Eclipse winner. Should he be able to annex the Lonesome Glory? Really good. And you've actually got a equally engaging running of the Entenmann. 75,000 to start things, a mile, 2 miles and a quarter, and then the 2.5 mile grade one Lonesome Glory tomorrow at Belmont. Nice. Sid Fernando, Sire Watch, Pedigree Focus, brought to you by Hillandale. And book three concluded yesterday. Just another boffo day of horse sale. It just will not let up. And what I brought up yesterday, and it was really fun to get Jesse Ullery on the show for the first time, the fact that so many buyers are staying on the grounds and, you know, building inventory. It's pushing and stretching everybody deeper and deeper into the sale. So the always important and carefully watched middle market discussion, we'll get Sid's take, and we'll get a chance to visit through the kind of sales that a lot of the new sires are racking up. This was the portion, book two, book three, and today the start of book four, that get the stallions off to good starts. We will catch up with Ashley Burness. Didn't get to her yesterday. My fault. Things kind of got stacked up like planes over O'Hare. But Johnny Bear, unbelievable. It's just amazing to come back and win the Northern Dancer again. A lot of fun. And Dick and Seth and a couple of other trainer visits that I will keep close to the vest. I also, we got a few things that from the rip from today's headlines to get to, including the Pegasus World Cup extravaganza, as well as an additional juvenile sidelining that happened after we got off the air. We told you about Instagram. Jay Pribman off post-wedding, post-marriage, but Brad Free having to swing into action. He had the Instagram story, and then a half an hour later, word comes that Roadster is going to have to take time off. So, no Breeders' Cup for Roadster, quote. And the fact that Baffert said he's not going to run for a while, that didn't sound too good. So, two of the biggest early season two-year-old names, Instagram and Roadster, both taking some time off. There was a bunch of that time off discussion yesterday. Good Magic off the rest of the year. They'll regroup into next year. We'll get to some of that, and including that Pegasus news. There's going to be a Pegasus turf race, too, and a pick 68. You got to pick the nine races in a row. Horses in order. Back after this with Pete Fornitzell.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Daytime Southern California thoroughbred racing action continues in beautiful Orange County through Sunday, September 23rd, with the LA County Fair Thoroughbred Meet at Los Alamitos Racecourse with a new first post time. The exciting daytime racing action will now start at 2 p.m. Pacific every Thursday through Sunday. The meet is highlighted by three $100,000 stakes races, the Barrett's Juvenile, Barrett's Debutante, and the brand new Los Alamitos Special at 1 1/4 miles. And we've also added a second pick five wager featuring the final five races on the card. Plus, horse players, don't forget that Los Alamitos will host a pair of live money daytime handicapping contests on Saturday, September 15th, and then again on Saturday, September 22nd. You could win a seat to the 2019 NHC in Las Vegas. Join us on track or at your favorite satellite or ADW provider through September 23rd. For more, go to losalamitos.com.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Pennsylvania's breeding program is truly the most lucrative in North America. Now, we'll pay a 50% breeder award for PA-sired, PA-bred maidens who run first, second, or third, with 25% for non-PA-sired, PA-breds. Last year, the number of mares bred rose by 15% in Pennsylvania. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfratello. Please visit us at PABred.com.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
One scotch, one bourbon, one beer. One scotch, one bourbon, one beer. Please, Mr. Bartender, listen here. I ain't here for trouble and have no fear. One scotch, one bourbon, one beer. I don't want soda, no bubble gum. You got what I want, just serve me some. Since my baby's been gone, everything's lost. I'm on this kick and I can't get off. One scotch, one bourbon, one beer.
There you go. Pete Fornatal joining us. And, of course, he is a mixologist and has written about distilling and Amos Milburn. Version one. There's you know what? There's almost no bad versions of one Scotch, one bourbon, one beer. Pete, good morning.
Good morning. It is such a good one. You're absolutely right, and it is fun. In addition to getting to write about racing and gambling, to write about another quote unquote vice a few years ago. Gosh, 4 years ago now, did a book called Brooklyn Spirits featuring some of the exciting stuff going on here in the borough that gets so much play on your Wednesday at the races show, Steve. One of these years I want to get into trying to figure out another way. There have been so many books about craft beer. I do dream of finding a way to put my spin on it, do my take on what I call the third wave of craft brewing, the way it's become so hyper-local all over the country with great spots popping up. That was a fun adventure on Sunday in Toronto. Against my better judgment, I eschewed the track in favor of a little brewery tour and found some amazing little spots and ended up watching those races on the phone instead.
Well, you're in Toronto on whatever occasions, however often you get a chance to go, even if it's once a year or once every couple of years, why not? You took advantage of it on the pass-through in Northern Kentucky and Cincinnati, too, right? We had that conversation about...
Absolutely. Yeah. Amazing stuff going on in both places. You know, I don't think too many people think of Northern Kentucky as a beer hotbed, but I thought they were doing some really cool stuff at Braxton Brewing over there. That's a place I would definitely go back to. In fact, I have a long Kentucky stint coming up between EquestriCon and the Breeders' Cup, and I'm doing the wise guy move of flying into and out of Cincinnati. I might have to stop by and check them out, as well as Rheingeist in Cincy proper in that, I guess they call it the Over the Rhine area. Steve, you'd know better than me, but there's a wonderful roof deck and cool indoor bar, basically an old factory that's become a brewery, and it's definitely worth the trip, even if you're not drinking. It's just a cool space to check out, especially that roof deck.
Well, the history, if my time in Cincinnati, and I just know from the, you know, this is well before, this is the 80s, but the history of Cincinnati in particular, as a first of all, the German heritage, and so you had just countless breweries and a lot of the small ones and at one time larger, you know, survived for a certain period, and between Wiedemann and Utipol, particularly Berger, and the history was there, and so it shouldn't have been a surprise that, you know, that with this craft and this, even the distilling side of things, in a kind of this resurgence that really started, you know what, Pete, it started probably 30 years ago with the home brewery kits and all that.
Yep.
Wasn't
yep.
that the origin of it?
Yeah, the law changed. It's actually a pretty interesting story. It was during the Carter administration. Home brewing from the end of Prohibition until the 80s had actually been illegal. And I think Billy Carter might have had something to do with it in some way, shape, or form. The laws got changed, allowing home brewing, creating this culture, and then slowly out of that, you saw places springing up around the country, and some had persevered through the whole thing, like the great story of Fritz Maytag and Anchor Brewing in San Francisco. But there's a whole rich history associated with it. And you mentioned Cincinnati. You remind me of one of my favorite lines, one of my best contributions, I think, to the Mike Maloney book, Betting with an Edge. There's a great scene, one of my favorite scenes in the book, takes place at a bookmaking operation in a bar in Cincinnati, where Mike was an occasional customer, I guess we could say. And I said, we were talking about what the bar looked like, and I said, what would have been on tap? And he, without hesitation, said, Hudepole. We are getting Hudepole in the book. That is such a great reference. And so I know they've, you're right, for not just in these latter waves of beer culture, there's been something fairly distinct going on there for a long time. And I know at least one hipster T-shirt outfit that sells a Hudepohl T-shirt. I've been meaning to buy one for Mike as just an ongoing thank you for all the knowledge and experience I got working on that book for him. Now that that's come up, maybe I'll actually do that today.
Well, my days at Riverfront for what we call the Vern Rapp years, when for those of you that are Reds fans, and it was a bad era baseball wise, but it was always fun to go. And there was a vendor, a beer vendor, and any Reds fans of a certain age will know the calls. And he went through. He had a couple. He had several different chants, and the ones that stick in my head. Ice cold Udy Gold, and you'd hear that from him. Ice cold Udy Gold, and then the best in the heaviest portions of the Cincinnati summer, and you know, being a river town, it's oppressive. The Reds are hot. This beer is not, that'll never leave. And there was nothing better than a Udy Gold with a Cons Brat. Unbelievable. It's
Mario
so much
Soto
fun.
On the mound. Am I
Mario
right?
Soto. You bet. Tom Browning. I was there for Tom Browning's perfect game.
Which
came on a rain delay. I think I've told that story. My buddy Doug and I, we had driven to Lexington with Doug's wife Patty to pick up her daughter, and on the way back, because Doug and I had tickets, and the game looked like it was going to be rained out. And as we're driving back, now it's like 9:15, and we're driving back from Lexington. And I said, "Doug, put on the big one, put on WLW." And there's Marty Brenneman. They're taking off the tarp, and we're going to start this one in about 20 minutes. And I said, "Great, we're going to drop off the girls." And Doug and I hustled down, and we got there for the bottom of the first. And Tom Browning proceeded to.
Oh, that's
pitch a perfect
great
game.
Story.
Yeah.
That's fantastic. You're one up on me. I've never seen a perfect game. I mean, I guess not that many people have, really, relative to the amount of baseball fans, but that's a great story to go along with it. I'm very envious of that one for sure.
I'd be happy to tell Cincinnati stories endlessly. I loved it there. And
does your allegiance remain in baseball terms? We've never talked about like modern. We've talked about, you know, some old school baseball stuff. I don't feel like we've ever really talked about baseball 2018.
My baseball interest around that same time when I was working at Proctor got friendly with a guy by the name of Rick Delewski through a girlfriend, and Rick got me involved in fantasy baseball, and this was, he had gone to University of Chicago, and he and a bunch of B school grads, they had started their own version of fantasy baseball before anybody knew about rotisserie.
Oh, that's great.
And they had a scoring system based on wins and saves and shutouts and total bases on the hitting side. And Rick and I started going to games, and he invited me to participate. This is 1984. And if I'm not mistaken, the book, you know, Dan Okrent and the guys from Rotisserie League Baseball, the book came out maybe that next winter, the 84, 85.
Yeah, and it was right in there. Maybe even a little later. If it's wrong, it's in that direction. It's definitely well before that.
Well, and so from that point, I moved so often. I went from Cincinnati to. I grew up basically a Red Sox fan as a kid in Hartford, and my father was a Mets fan after the Dodgers left. So the Mets, National League, Red Sox, American League. But then I was there for the Reds. Then I moved to Kansas City, and I got to Kansas City in September of '84, they were. The next year, I had season tickets for the '85 championship, which was unbelievable. I split. I had a 40-game plan with a preacher from Kansas City. He had 40 tickets, and I had 40, and that was really special. The following the Royals through to the I-70 series. And then I moved to Charlotte, and then I came back to the Northeast. So my team allegiance, my years in Montreal, and then, you know, what happened to the Expos, what was done to the Expos was just disgusting.
Yeah, very gross.
Yeah, so I basically... My team allegiance has been sort of muddled since. I don't have a particular, you know, I've been a Brewer fan off and on. I just, you know, the Eagles are my only team, and the Sabres are my team affiliations.
When you get to see, you know, after seeing Tom Browning pitch the perfect game, I mean, what else is there?
Well, true, and I could tell you another story about, you mentioned Soto, about a near perfect game. He had retired 26 straight, and then it went south against the Cardinals. I'll never forget that either. We were sitting right behind the plate, and it's funny you say you haven't seen him. I came so close. I saw Phil Niekro carry a no hitter into the ninth at Shea. And I came very close myself to several, and I'd always wanted to see one, and so I know the feeling.
Yeah, I've seen a no-hitter, but it's probably the least exciting one you could conjure. There was a game, gosh, I'm trying to think when this would have been, mid-aughts, early to mid-aughts at Yankee Stadium, where the Astros threw a five-pitcher no-hitter against the Yankees. Roy Oswalt started but had to come out for one of his many injuries, and the bullpen cleaned it up. But it was kind of cool just to at least say, hey, I can finally cross this one off the list. You know, being a Mets fan all those years and mostly going to Mets fans, no wonder. And then, of course, everybody has stories like this, but I was invited to the Johan Santana no-hitter and turned it down because I was feeling under the weather and it was cold, and
oh,
ended
my God.
Up sitting at my desk, very bittersweet. But that was not that long after my father passed away, and it was one of those like real baseball moments of just feeling that generational connection and something he never got to see that would have meant so much to him. And my memory of the end of that one was, no offense to Gary Cohen, who's phenomenal, but turning it off and throwing Howie Rose on the hi-fi down here in the office and listening to Howie call it home was one of my favorite baseball memories of all time, regardless of what it did to poor Johan's shoulder. But it was an amazing moment in Mets history, that's for sure.
Well, it's funny because the one I'm going to refer to was that came a couple of years earlier, was Mario Soto, you bring up, and me and Rick, and I think Joe, our late friend Joe Iguana was there, and maybe Kevin Buchanan, too, from St. Louis, who also has passed, really sad, actually. And Soto pitched he was just unhittable, and got to the ninth, and with two outs, he got two fast strikes on George Hendrick and then almost hit him with two high pitches. And then Hendrick sent a ball so deep to center field to break up the no-hitter, but the Reds, I think the Reds were only up 1-0. So the game was tied, too. And then if I'm not mistaken, I think Tom Nieto, Tom Nieto figures into this, the catcher, somehow. But Hendrick hit a ball 500 feet. I mean, it was unbelievable.
That's got to the emotions that you go through in those moments. It's the reversals is unbelievable.
Too funny. There is a website that tracks no hitters that have been rebuffed in the ninth inning. I've looked up that before. It's so funny that God, you know, this is like the Haskin conversations I have with Haskin that go completely off the rails. But that's all right. Talk about whatever you want to. What did you write about this week? What do we got in the contest world?
Well, we had big stuff happening. We had the Woodbine Mile contest, which has really grown, basically doubled in size in its its 3 years of existence, and it's one that I have my eye on to just become a bigger and bigger deal. And every year, I think we talked about this briefly last week, but I have the side bet with Mike Eaves, the tournament director. If a USA player wins, I get to pick a jersey for him, and vice versa. And the USA players did not let me down. They ended up in four of the top five slots. Woodbine put a lot of effort into marketing to USA players, and it paid off in a big way. A lot of people showing up to represent. And it looks like Mike Eaves next year at the draft will be wearing some sort of Louisville Cardinals gear. Maybe Big John Nichols can lend me something. I don't know. We'll see if we can save Eaves the trouble of having to buy something for James Metz, who gets the job done. Young guy, 35 years old, not deeply experienced in contests, but went and had a great day and bet very smart and used his ability to look at horses in the paddock. The big blows being Oscar Performance, who he loved coming in. He actually said something really smart. Part of the reason he decided to make the trip to fly north of the border was how much he liked that horse and knew that that opinion, he thought, specifically gave him a chance to win and he'd be drawing live. You don't hear too many people. Most people decide, I'm going to go to the tournament and then look at the races. It's actually pretty smart to think of in terms of, okay, well, let me see what my opinions are before I commit 3,500 Canadian or 7,000 Canadian if you wanted to do two entries. And that's a lesson I thought some people could learn from. Maybe even if you are, you know you're going to go for one, but that idea, if you have really strong opinions, makes a lot of sense to get that second entry. So that got him up and running. And then Johnny Bear, who's actually his second pick in the race, he figured he was going to bet Patterson Cross, but looking at the two in the paddock, preferred Johnny Bear, preferred the odds on Johnny Bear, 1,700 to win, and he blows by Tony Joe, Tony who we talk about so frequently. I thought Tony was going to have his first live bank major. He sat there at one point on the board with 19,000 on one entry and four on the other, and it looked like it was going to be his day, but just some shrewd betting. Tony did nothing wrong. He kept firing, kept trying to improve that total, and that strategy was proved to be certainly along the right lines. Had he sat or had he even combined his two, he would have got blown by anyway, but James Metzger gets the job done in the end. Tony, another high-up finish. Alan Schaefer's name up there on the top of the leaderboard as well. He ends up running second. Scott Carson won himself a seat to the National Horse Players Championship, and I'm leaving out my fourth U.S. player. I'll look that up real quick. But it was a great result for the USA players, a great result for the tournament itself, and I just think that's a tournament that's going to continue to grow in size and stature in the contest world, and one that folks should really be thinking about. It's a great opportunity to go visit Woodbine in Toronto, and you have the added benefit of it taking place during the film festival, and so I was able to, that's why I spent those couple extra days. My actual anniversary was yesterday, but we consider that our anniversary weekend. So Susan comes up with me. I work on the Saturday, but we sort of celebrate around that and have an opportunity to have some fun and see some movies. So it's a great weekend up there in Toronto. Thanks so much to those guys for doing such a good job, and to those USA players for making me look good.
So your anniversary is the 18th?
It is.
Ours is the 17th.
There you go. It's a great time to get married. We just hit 14.
Well, we're half that. Together 11, but married 7. And we actually spent the Teppan, and you were there for that.
Yes. That was my first mile.
Mine too. And Tina came up for that, and that was on our anniversary, the 17th, and we went to Niagara Falls the next day.
Oh, that's perfect.
Yeah.
The other player who I gave short shrift to, and I really shouldn't have, Nick Nose, who's amazing. He lives in New Jersey but flies up for all the tournaments. I can only assume on that great Porter Airlines flight from Newark to the city airport. I don't know that for sure, but that's what I'd do. But he actually won also Woodbine's Player of the Year series, nosing out Schaefer, and got rewards of over $10,000 for that, prize money as well as a buy-in to next year's Mile tournament already. So pretty impressive stuff to have the Canadian Player of the Year be an American, too.
I love it. Well, the the group that have really, the Canadian invaders, they've been so strong in throughout the contest world, and it's nice that they, you know, get a chance to host everybody that when they get the trip up to TO. So another nice visit through Woodbine, and I continue to to catch up. We had Brian Lynch yesterday, and Kevin Attard, and Ashley Burness is going to join us today to talk about Johnny Bear, and it's really an amazing turn of events, the way, you know, the way that, you know, the whole afternoon kind of culminated when it came to the upset win again. I mean, for him to come back a year later and win it again.
It was an amazing story.
Yeah, it was. It really was. Well, what's coming up? What do we look forward to here? Got the fall weekends are going to be big between the Santa Anita and Keeneland and Belmont opportunities. Belmont's got this big, this new
super qualifier
coming, and it always does seem that we get to this juncture post Saratoga, post Del Mar, and the NHC qualifications. Now anybody that doesn't have their seat or second seat, that feels like they start to, you know, really get into line right now. And I think the Orleans too, right? We got the Fall Classic coming.
Absolutely. The pressure definitely on for those who want to book that ticket for the NHC, and that's coming up, obviously, in January. Lots of opportunities online and in live bankroll tournaments as well. Live tournament-wise, you mentioned the super qualifiers that are coming up. I don't have all the details on those, but that's certainly a way for players who are still on the outside looking in or looking to get a second NHC entry, something for them to be looking at. We also have the big one at Laurel. I believe that's coming up next weekend. As far as DRF tournaments goes and the events that we have our focus on, they're both October events. The Keeneland Fall Challenge, great weekend to go to Keeneland. Not only can you play in the Fall Challenge on Sunday, but there is the $400 live bank event on Saturday. So two opportunities to win cash and prizes, including seats at Keeneland. You can win your way in at the DRF tournament site, tournaments.drf.com. You also mentioned the Fall Classic. If you're fancying a weekend in Las Vegas, if you're more of a mythical player, you have the opportunity, or bankroll concerns, maybe Keeneland a little out of range, maybe you'd want to target the Fall Classic instead, Orleans, Las Vegas, that's a $500 buy-in. The events on DRF tournaments, you can win your seat to that as well as $500 in travel. We're also just starting to rev up for the November Del Mar contest, and this is not one that I target every year. I've been some years, but I found out, very interesting, as part of her birthday festivities, my wife Susan, interested in doing a bicycle race that just so happens to take place the same weekend as the Del Mar contest. So she said, "Hey, is there anything you'd want to do that weekend in addition?" I said, "Absolutely. You know, we'll pack it in. Brewery tours, roll by the tournament, see some Del Mar fall." So that's going to be a weekend. I'll be out there, and folks have a chance to join me by right now just feeding in. There'll be qualifiers soon, but the feeders are already underway for the Del Mar Fall Challenge, which is another event. You know, they play, there's always a strong field with the local contingent, but for me, that's a great time to go out there. The two times I've been to that fall meet at Del Mar, I've really enjoyed it and been meaning to make it a regular fixture, and this year I'll get to go out there. Folks who want to join, check out tournaments.drf.com.
Outstanding, and you told me earlier that you and Perrin heading over to the zoo. You're going to the Bronx Zoo?
We're going to go to the Bronx Zoo today. We have no school, of course, for the High Holy Day. And rather than, I thought about maybe having a regular work day and bringing in a sitter, but decided it's a Perrin all summer was talking about getting back to the Bronx Zoo. Seems like a good opportunity to zip up there and hopefully see the polar bear who was not on display last time through, to much to Perrin's consternation. Hopefully we'll get the polar bear sighting in and have a great day up there. It's such a great zoo. It's huge.
The Bronx Zoo trip, always special. Tina and I go about every 2 years, it feels like now.
What's your favorite thing to check out? What should I put on my list for today?
Ooh, interesting. I'm funny. I like the birdhouse with the walkthrough as you're coming up the hill when you get off the Bronx River Parkway and park right, you know, right there.
Yep.
And you start to walk up the hill. The first thing is the birds, and I'm a sucker for birds anyway, so that's always fun. And I get a big kick out of the sea lion. The pool. You know, they go around and around, and they come out and do some kind of stuff. And
we'll check out a feeding.
Fun.
I think they do those public feedings, so we'll do that today too. Those are both great ideas.
There's also they've got that mat, was it Madagascar? They've
yes.
got the yeah that's
a great cool. exhibit.
Yeah.
Perrin, I don't know, this is sort of like when I was a kid, I'd root for the bad guys in professional wrestling. She likes the Fusa. I don't know if you know about the Fusa, but the Fusa is that's the enemy, the predator of the lemur. For some reason she's decided is her favorite animal. So she's going to want to go see the Fusa.
This is like in Goodfellas, the kind of like Jimmy, the kind of guy rooted for the bad guys. Unbelievable, the Fusa.
I don't know what I've done to create this child, but this is where we are, folks. She's at the paddock bar every day, and she likes the Fusa.
Well, she's going to make somebody a fabulous girlfriend or wife, undoubtedly. Yeah, it's pretty funny. Have a wonderful time, and this was a rollicking visit. I appreciate it, Pete.
Oh, always fun, Steve, and thank you for letting me go deep down the rabbit hole today. Very
Not
enjoyable
at all.
Stuff. We will be talking soon, my friend.
Looms boldly. Pete Fornitzel. We're going to take a timeout here, come back, and Bill Gallo is going to jump in with USA, steeplechase community, working their way back down. And in fact, I got to ask him too, because I think I think there's also Sunday, in addition to tomorrow, I think the High Hope is on Sunday, if I'm not mistaken. We'll get that from Bill next. Bill Gallo, steeplechase. The grade one tomorrow, Lonesome Glory, and the Bill Entman Memorial. Stay with us.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
The thoroughbred breeding industry will never be the same with the launch of Daily Racing Form's Buyer-Sire Performance Standings, presented by Darley. These groundbreaking ratings use buyer speed figures to measure a stallion's performance beyond wins and earnings, focusing on providing a measurement of a sire's true ability to produce high-quality horses. View the Buyer-Sire Performance Standings at drf.com/buyer-sire and get the true information that breeds results. That's drf.com/buyer-sire.
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Hi, this is retired race caller Tom Durkin. So, after this year's Derby, I stopped by Top Round Roast Beef on Shelbyville Road in St. Matthews. I got two sandwiches, one for back at the hotel and another for the trip back home to New York. The first one was so good, I had the other one right there. Certified Angus beef, roasted 5 hours, each one made to order. You can taste the difference. Top Round Roast Beef, Shelbyville Road, St. Matthews. Tell them Tom Durkin sent you. Oh, by the way, try the frozen custard too.
Do you ever wonder what happens to your old friends, including the great champions that inspired unforgettable memories, and maybe even let you cash a ticket or two over the years? We even have a former child prodigy.
Here is a superstar. That horse's name is Afternoon Delights, and Kent the Sermon Afternoon Delights absolutely galloping in the Hollywood Futurities.
These are the champions that help out the horses that might not have won a Grade 1 race, but always tried just as hard. Come visit them all at Old Friends when you're in Kentucky, or at our Bobby Frankel division, Old Friends in Saratoga. I know they'll be glad to see you. Go to oldfriendsequine.org or call us at 502-863-1775.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the five Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
Down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing. This is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
When they kick at your front door, how are you gonna come? With your hands on your head or on the trigger of your gun? When the law breaks in, how are you gonna go? Shot down on the pavement or waiting in death row? You can crush us, you can bruise us, but you have to answer to, whoa, the guns of Brixton.
We're back at the races, about 10 minutes to the top of the hour, and I am right about High Hope, because our friend Tom Herman just sent me a note, and indeed Sunday rescheduled, shifted from the spring to the fall at the Kentucky Horse Park, but equally important, tomorrow at Belmont, the Lonesome Glory, as well as the Bill Entman and Bill Gallo on the scene, of course. Good morning.
Good morning, Steve. I'm not quite on the scene at Belmont yet. I'm still in Fairhill, Maryland, but heading to New York tomorrow. Looking forward to it. We've got two really nice races, the first and second tomorrow.
Very much, and I gave a thumbnail sketch, considering that there'll only be one more Grade 1 after tomorrow. Anybody with designs on a championship, on an Eclipse Award, they got to make their move tomorrow, probably, and everything seems to go through Rick Hendricks.
Ricky's having a terrific year. He's just off that Grade 1 win at Saratoga. The Turf Riders with Optimus Prime, and Optimus Prime is back in for tomorrow. Should go off as the favorite. But he holds a heavy hand. He's really concentrated on this year. He's got a great owner behind him, Ross Bryan Farm, George Mahoney. And they're buying horses, and they're really playing the game hard, and they're reaping the rewards right now. So it's Belmont is a critical race for us, this Grade 1 here, and the novice as well, because it launches horses for October 20th at Far Hills, which is our championship day. And we come back with a $125,000 novice race on that card, and, of course, the $450,000 Grade 1 Grand National. So it's an exciting time of year for us, and we're just about to launch our fall season. We'll start with Belmont, and then you just alluded to the High Hope races. Sunday is a great day of racing. You just mentioned that High Hope has shifted to the fall schedule. Our horsemen have embraced that. In fact, the race chairman down there, they're all excited because there's been quite a bit of interest between the sale down there in Lexington and the activity on Sundays, the closing day of the sale, and we've got a full day of races, really nice card, six-race card. We ended up splitting a race, believe it or not, one of these little ratings handicap races. We had 17 entered, and we split it yesterday. So all is good in the world of steeplechasing right now.
Well, we'll talk about High Hope in a minute. Let's focus on the Lonesome Glory, 2.5 miles, and beyond Optimus Prime, whose first North American performance was just tremendous, and the win over New Member and Iranistan. But I can't help but really begin the conversation with Zangibil, who bypassed the Saratoga summer, but comes into this with probably the best and most complete resume, Bill, as we look to both Thursday and to Far Hills. The win in the Iroquois and the placements in the Colonial Cup and the Temple Gwathmi, that's the nicest resume going into this part of the season.
He's very, very good, and they specifically kept him out of summer racing, pointing to the fall schedule, meaning Belmont and Far Hills, and they've got their sights set on an Eclipse Award for sure. The Iroquois Grade 1 in the spring certainly isn't going to hurt those chances. He romped in the race, and he beat a really good horse, Modem, who I think you know. Modem, unfortunately, has been injured since Saratoga. He's got a minor injury, and he's going to miss the Far Hills race, so... Zangibil is, probably the leading contender right now for the Eclipse Award, and he's running against his entry mate here in Optimus Prime. So the really important thing to think about tomorrow, though, is the configuration of the race course. They do not jump the two. There are three fences on the front side and three down the back. It's very different than Saratoga, which is 7/8 rounds, a much larger racing circumference here, and they start in front of the stands, and they'll jump one fence and then three down the backside, three on the front side, another three down the backside. But it's about 5/8, if not 3/4 of a mile from the last fence down the backside to the finish. And they will, as you know, they do not jump the last two fences in this race, similar to Saratoga. And we put that into effect last year. And so it's a sprint. It's almost two races in one. It's a very unique situation for us, and it's a it becomes a real jockey's race. But you jump that last fence down the backside the second time, and you go between 5/8 and 3/4 to the wire, and they'll drop on the final bend. They'll drop to the inside rail. So it's a jump race and a flat race. All in one. It's going to be pretty exciting.
Well, walking through this field beyond Zangibil and Optimus Prime, Show Court, I got to talk about the Smithwick winner. It ran an even race in the Turf Riders and Arch Kingsley and Michael Mitchell. And, of course, Mitchell, really the most emergent rider on the jump scene. And Show Court, I think, deserves a look.
He certainly does. He ran a terrific race in the Smithwick, and I'm not sure what happened in the Turf Riders. You would have thought he run a little bit better. It was a little bit longer. This is, once again, a little longer than that. We go from 2 1/16 in the Smithwick to 2 3/8 in the Turf Riders, and now we're at 2.5. He does have that speed, that flat speed, which is we've talked about it many times before. It's very important, particularly important in New York for Saratoga and Belmont. You've got to be able to sprint to the wire, and Show Court, he might have that little kick in him.
Three Kingdoms for Julie Gamina, and we'll talk about Gamina as well when we look at the Entenmann, as it happens. I think she's got the major player there. Jack Fisher offering Scudic as well in here. Scudic, a bit of a price, and hasn't won since last May, actually, at Great Meadow. We've also got Personal Start, 10-1. Mrs. Bryant, homebred, 7-year-old gelding, still's got plenty of jumping to do. Richard Valentine, and Fisher also has got Hinterland in here, who's going to add the blinkers. And Hinterland... didn't realize it until looking here, but doesn't have a win in North America.
No, he was actually second in the Lonesome Glory back in 15. If you look at that race, he got beat a half a length by Bob LeBeau.
How about that? Wow,
really good. One of a real good jumper at the time, and but he adding the blinkers could be a significant move for Fisher. Once again, it pertains to the aspect of speed. And, you know, speed wins jump races in New York. I can tell you that for sure. If you look at the weights, you'll see that, you know, the weights are indicative. It is a handicap. I did assign the weights, and we have horses that are rated throughout our year. All of our hurdle horses are rated throughout the year by an independent committee and that I oversee. And it's not, these aren't the exact ratings weights, but they're pretty close. So if you look at the weights from high weight to low weight, it'll give you an indication of, you know, how the horses are assessed and what chances they might have. So, you know, it's going to be a matter of the high weights toting the high weight. Optimus Prime and Claire Palmer at the top at the 58 and Zanzibel at the 56. So if you're looking for a price-type horse, you know, clearly you could look at some of those lower weights. Weight becomes significant when you're going over a distance of ground, particularly 2.5 miles. That weight advantage can certainly help, and in the past it has helped in these handicap races, some of the lower-weighted horses. So there could be some value in the race for sure.
Now, the Lonesome Glory goes as the second tomorrow, and in addition, as we said, the Entenmann tomorrow as well. The novice stake, $75,000 and a mile and a quarter. And how about Gibilfaro? Got to mention Jack Fisher sending out this one for Sean Clancy, and certainly has been pretty effective in the two North American starts since Sean found this horse abroad and brought the six-year-old over. I had to focus in, too, on Kate Dalton with Belisarius, who looked so good at Monmouth during the summer, that afternoon when you had, three races that day at Monmouth, and Kate Dalton won a pair. Leslie Young has got a horse that Irv Naylor has brought to the U.S., the Irish-bred Indian Hawk. This is a fun race.
It really is. There are a bunch of new shooters here in the race. You just mentioned several of them. Gibilfaro, he's going to be tough for sure. His two American starts were really good. He won at Tryon in April, and then he came back at Percy Warner in Nashville, and he was a very good second to Iranistan. And you guys, I think you are familiar with Iranistan. He's one of our younger 4-year-old horses, or one of our top younger horses. So that was no embarrassment getting beat by Iranistan. So Gibilfaro will be in the mix for sure. Belisarius is a big jump up. You know, he looked good breaking his maiden at Monmouth, but doesn't quite have the experience, and he would be a value horse for sure. Obviously, Dalton, she had the opportunity to run him in a non-winners of two late in the Saratoga meet off of the Monmouth win, and she skipped it to run here. So she must be keen on the horse, but it is a big jump in class form. No Wonder was a really nice second at Saratoga and the Michael Walsh, and he probably will be the favorite in the race. Kingsley's got Boss Man, who won at Saratoga, then was third in the Walsh. He's got that flat form that we talk about all the time. It's an interesting race. Leslie Young, I don't know much about Indian Hawk other than he won his last start abroad in England. He won it easily, and she's been training for this race. So, very interesting race. Some new names. I'll be interested to see who comes out of this. But whoever does come out of it, the top three or four are certainly going to launch right into the into the Far Hills card on October 20.
Well, first and second. Yeah, this is fun. And it's going to be a gorgeous day. It looks like the weather's clearing out. And I would think with the rain that came yesterday, they're off the turf today in New York. But you would think that turf course should be absolutely perfect for jumping tomorrow.
Yeah, we were very lucky in Saratoga. In fact, the rains are good for us. And it's a common misconception, you know, rain, soft going, those are better conditions for us. It's actually safer. They go a little bit slower, a little bit more deliberate. But, you know, soft ground is good. Yielding ground is good for us. Good ground is the best for us. It's not a concern. It's not a safety concern. And I did hear that there came off today. That turf will be absolutely spectacular for us. The other thing to remember, and I constantly remind management of this, Martin understands it, we race on the outer portion of the turf. So we don't disturb. There's no turf damage in, when we run jump races, either at Saratoga or Belmont. The only time we infringe on any turf at all is, as I said, on this final circuit, they do come off the turn and they drop to the inside rail or fairly close to the inside rail when they don't jump those last two fences in the stretch. But I'm really looking forward to it. You know, our horses came out of the Saratoga meet sound because the ground was a little softer than normal, and the Belmont conditions will be ideal for us tomorrow.
Well, beyond tomorrow at Belmont, we mentioned High Hope at the Horse Park on Sunday, and a nice five-race card, plus a training race named for the late Ned Bonney, and it looks like a nice group of races there. You got a couple of, you got that split division you mentioned, plus the three-mile timber allowance race, and a maiden, straight maiden, and a maiden claimer. Looks like a very nice card, and then the scene shifts next week to outside Baltimore to beautiful Hunt Valley as Shawan Downs, and that card will come together next Monday, Tuesday.
Monday we take entries on it. Yeah, and there's a, you know, it's a very popular card there in Maryland. A lot of horsemen that, you know, missed the Saratoga meet are, you know, primed and ready to go. So the entries for High Hope were indicative. We've got a pretty good horse inventory right now, eager to get going on the race meet circuit. So really looking forward to it. One thing I wanted to mention to you, you might have missed it, but on that overnight for the Ned Bonney, that's it's not a misprint. Joe Sharp is the Joe Sharp. He's riding a horse called Team Colors. It's in a training flat race, and Joe's going to put on the silks and get a spin around the High Hope course in a mile and a half turf race. So that would be fun to see Joe ride.
Oh, that's tremendous. And Team Colors... Team Colors is, I think, was the Jimmy Jerkins, the centennial that got claimed at the end of the meet.
Exactly. He was claimed, and this is a training flat race, so this is kind of a workout. But Joe's got him entered, and he's going to ride him, and it'll be fun to see Joe, and be fun to see Joe ride.
Oh, that's tremendous. I love it. You also got... Wow, that's tremendous. I'm just looking through here. And I should mention, by the way, since we're on this on that front, you know, yesterday Maggie Kimmett joined us, and they've got the Real Ryder Cup in Unionville on Sunday. And it just got to be very emotional for everybody. Patty Young is going to ride, and just a special situation there, obviously.
Yeah, I haven't been following that closely. I probably should have been, but I've been traveling. But that'll be great. I mean, Patty's doing great. So I'm at Saratoga. You know, so he's got a great following of friends and fans, and he survived a very serious injury, and he's doing just grand. It'd be great to see him. Obviously, I won't be there, but I'm sure I'll see some Facebook stuff, but good to hear that he's riding.
Well, and there'll be a stop, actually. You guys do swing around to Unionville, and that'll come Breeders' Cup weekend on the Sunday, the Pennsylvania Hunt Cup. But for those that are making plans, whether you're coming to Far Hills on the 20th, between now and then, you've got plenty of opportunity. High Hope on Sunday, then next Saturday at Shawan, then at Foxfield, October 7th in Charlottesville, upstate. Geneseo, out west toward Buffalo, south of Buffalo, the Genesee Valley Hunt, Middleburg, the Virginia Fall season, and then Far Hills and Aiken and the Gold Cup as well on the 27th. So lots of terrific chasing out in the country. After we wrap up at Belmont tomorrow, go to nationalsteeplechase.com and then the satellite websites for all of the hunt meets, and make a plan. Go bring the family, you tailgate, and just one of the great experiences in racing. And Bill, as always, I appreciate it. We will talk ahead of Far Hills, undoubtedly, and good luck tomorrow. I'll be certainly watching and betting.
Thanks a lot, Steve. Appreciate your support, and I look forward to seeing you as always, you and Tina at Far Hills on the 20th. And bring money, because we're betting this year.
Exactly. And the paramutual side of things, and I would think that the pools are going to be sizable because of the international participation, and between Gordon Elliott and Willie Mullins and whoever else is going to be involved, and a lot of I would think that during the whole lead up to this and the execution of getting the parimutuel wagering first approved and then the technical elements at Far Hills, it should add a new dimension, and it's going to be an enhancement long term for the purses. It's only going to make Far Hills bigger and better.
It's a great relationship we've got going with Monmouth Park. Dennis Drazen and his group there, we've been having weekly meetings, and they'll probably become daily meetings at this point, but there's a lot that goes into it. The signal is going out on their network, so it's going to be betting on site. It's going to be betting through the simulcast signal. There's going to be betting in Europe. It's fascinating, and I think it's the future for us. You may have read we just went to high definition coverage of our races at all of our race meets. So the future is very promising for steeplechasing in the NSA, and it's an exciting time for us right now.
Tremendous. Well, follow Jump with NSA and on Twitter, and as we said, nationalsteeplechase.com, help you organize a trip to any of the great stops through the fall. And Bill, thanks as always.
Great. Thank you, Steve. Talk to you soon.
Bill Gallo, everybody, and the NSA. Always, always fun to catch up, and we haven't talked since Saratoga. Since the aftermath of the Turf Riders, Jumping with NSA on your Twitter machine. Top of the hour, a little past, and Sire Watch Pedigree Focus brought to you by Hill and Dale is next. Sid Fernando going to join us. We'll do some more recapping of what's gone on at the sale, and it has been just hair raising, fur flying. As the yearlings get redistributed out into the world. And one thing we haven't talked much about is how in light of all of the sales pressure, how the pinhookers are faring. Because I got a feeling they've had to go deeper into their pockets than they have in recent additions. So that's a question I'll ask Sid as well. Sid Fernando joins us next. Stay with us.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
The thoroughbred breeding industry will never be the same with the launch of Daily Racing Form's Buyer-Sire Performance Standings, presented by Darley. These groundbreaking ratings use buyer speed figures to measure a stallion's performance beyond wins and earnings, focusing on providing a measurement of a sire's true ability to produce high-quality horses. View the Buyer-Sire Performance Standings at drf.com/buyer-sire and get the true information that breeds results. That's drf.com/buyer-sire.
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Hi, this is retired race caller Tom Durkin. So, after this year's Derby, I stopped by Top Round Roast Beef on Shelbyville Road in St. Matthews. I got two sandwiches, one for back at the hotel and another for the trip back home to New York. The first one was so good, I had the other one right there. Certified Angus beef, roasted 5 hours, each one made to order. You can taste the difference. Top Round Roast Beef, Shelbyville Road, St. Matthews. Tell them Tom Durkin sent you. Oh, by the way, try the frozen custard too.
Do you ever wonder what happens to your old friends, including the great champions that inspired unforgettable memories? and maybe even let you cash a ticket or two over the years. We even have a former child prodigy.
Here is a superstar. That horse's name is Afternoon Delights, and Kent the Summer on Afternoon Delights absolutely galloping in the Hollywood Futurities.
These are the champions that help out the horses that might not have won a Grade 1 race, but always tried just as hard. Come visit them all at Old Friends when you're in Kentucky, or at our Bobby Frankel division, Old Friends in Saratoga. I know they'll be glad to see you. Go to oldfriendsequine.org or call us at 502-863-1775.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the five Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.